All right. How you doing, man? Kayak Fishing Radio Network's Late Show. And I am your host, Rob DeVore, otherwise known as the Bad Batcast. You can check up on all my goings-on at abadbatcast.com or the always illustrious and always popular yakangler.com. One thing that I thought that I found really cool recently was that Yak Angler got hooked up with the Yak Angler got hooked up with Google, man, as a news source. So I think that's really cool. All of their all of the articles there are going out on you can find them on Google News under Yak Angler. Which is, I think, is an awesome. It's a great step for that site. It's a great site. So if you got to be sure to check it out, man, because it's like a kayak fisher's dream website, man. It's got everything to it. So get on there, man. Get in there. It's awesome. So I think it's what's really cool too is that when you look up Yak Angler under Google News. And you see an article that that I wrote, you know, you see my name right there. And instead of AP or Reuters, it says Yak Angler as a source. I think that's kind of cool. So anyway, oh, there's Redfish Chuck. Hey, Chuck, how you doing, man?
Good, bud. How are you?
Ah, awesome so far. I'm didn't have anybody to sound check with on the phone, man, so I'm glad that you called.
Yeah, but good.
But so far, let's see what else we got going on. Sorry, I'm kind of scattered here at the moment, but I'm getting myself together here. My illustrious co-host, Lacey, when she walked by my computer, she kind of unplugged my headphones and so I got like one ear going right now, and my microphone was all screwed up, so. Glad I got everything back together, man. But, okay, last weekend, I was over at the always popular Tampa Tribune, what do they call that? Oh, the Frank Sargent's Tampa Tribune Outdoor Show. It's a boat show, outdoor show. It's a great event. You know, it's always a weekend-long event. Everybody's always... there's always a lot of people there, a lot of vendors. As far as the kayak fishing vendors go, there wasn't a whole lot of kayak things there. There was Hobie had a booth, and I got to check out, for the first time ever, a fully rigged out, tricked out, everything you can think to put on it, Hobie Pro Angler. And if you've never seen one of those are... that's quite a fishing boat right there, buddy. So,
yeah,
I mean, it had... Have you ever seen those, Chuck?
Yeah, I've seen them. They're pretty sick.
Oh, man. I mean, this thing had, like, the overhead bimini top, and it had the... I mean, it was a really nice... It was a ship for sure, man. I couldn't picture myself dragging that thing up and down the stairs, but... it was a, you know, New Canoe had a booth there. They were, those things are quite impressive too. I just can't get over the fact that the Yak Sushi didn't bring that down to Jacksonville with him, you know, because I guess Adam had it for a couple of days. And I mean, I just can't picture Adam on that thing. The thing's like 42 inches wide, you know, Adam would like get lost on that thing. So, you know, that's, you know, it was pretty neat, but there wasn't a whole lot of kayak fishing stuff there, but, there was, let's see, I got some notes here. The Standin' Fish. Have you ever seen the Standin' Fish, Chuck?
Is that what it's actually called, the Standin' Fish?
Yeah, it's kind of like a little leaning post, that you stick on your, kayak. It's got some rod holders and like a, I don't know, an ashtray on the top and a bunch of other stuff. Maybe not an ashtray, but some, you know, little compartments to put stuff on there. Rick Rosenberg was there. I thought it was kind of a cool little thing. You know, even though I go basic all the time. It was kind of a cool little thing, you know, something to kind of lean on. And, you know, if you're standing up in your kayak fishing all day, you know, have some drink holders and some other stuff. And, you know, you'd think it would add a whole lot of weight, but it only weighs in totally with the whole rig was like 26 pounds or something. So it wasn't too bad.
Yeah, that's pretty neat. No, I haven't seen that. I have yet to see that, actually.
Yeah, it's at Stand and Fish Stand and the letter N, fish.com. So check that out, man. It's kind of a cool thing. It was a little bit too much for me, you know, as far as, you know, I like basic, man. I don't even have a Scotty mount on my kayak. So, you know, I just use my flush mount rod holders, you know. And it's just less, for me, you know, simple is better. The less stuff to worry about, the better. So what else? Oh, the DOA, there was a whole bunch of seminars, but one of the seminars I saw was Jerry McBride doing a DOA seminar. And if you've never seen a DOA seminar, that's definitely something to behold there. You know, that guy, I mean, that guy can show you everything there is to know about fishing a DOA shrimp. And actually, you know, got to talking to the guy at the DOA booth, and, you know, he was, like, showing people how to tie knots. And, I mean, I kind of got totally DOA'd out, man. I picked up a lot of extra DOA stuff. My favorite measles, you know, clear red flake DOA shrimps and some terror eyes and some things like that. So, and those guys are a riot, man. If you ever get a chance to hang out with the DOA folks at their booth there, I know they're going to be in Jacksonville this weekend for the Jacksonville Florida Sportsman event. So, you know, get out there and see those guys, man. They're definitely awesome. And I know Jerry McBride, for one, is going to be at the Hobie booth all weekend. So make sure you stop and give that guy a hard time. I'm just kidding. All right, man. So how you doing, Chuck? You're right here from the stormy Titusville, stormy Mosquito Lagoon.
Nice sound effect.
Yeah. All right. So you weren't out there fishing today, were you? In the rain?
No, man. I was at the shop today working.
Yeah, it's it definitely today was like Miss Batcast said, today is a good day to be a duck, you know. So now we're you know, I'm getting excited about this thing, you know, and this Mosquito Lagoon trip, you know. And if you don't know, the Kayak Fishing Radio crew is heading down to Titusville to hook up with Chuck and Dee and whoever else is going to be crazy enough to camp out there and hotel it or do whatever, and we're going fishing for a couple of days. So jump on yakangler.com under events, and you too can go and fish with Chuck at the lagoon, man. It's going to be, I'm excited, man. I'm pretty pumped up. I hope we can get Laramie on a nice redfish there, man. She is pretty excited about it. So,
well, I'll tell you what, I'll make that my personal goal for the day.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. To make sure that she gets a good size redfish. If we have to cheat and use cut bait, we'll do that.
Well, hopefully we don't have to go that far. Cause, you know, a couple of weeks ago we went out and it was fishing 101, you know, and I took her out, and she, you know, hadn't been fishing since she was about 7. So we got her out there and said, okay, here's a, you know, this is spinning rod, spinning reel, you know, this is how you do this. And she actually bought some gear, and, you know, it was and I took her out to a nice flat place and said, okay, you know, there you go. Practice cast in there, man. And she did, and, you know, we were there for a couple of hours, and then we went to Sand Key, and she actually picked up her first fish, which is a 14-inch flounder. So she was kind of, you know, we're kind of pumped up about that. So now she's she's ready to go for tarpon now, she says. So she's all excited about that. I'm like, well, you got to kind of get ready for that one there, sweetie.
So, yeah, from the flounder to the tarpon. I like the jump. That's good.
Yeah, well, you know, I know she can do it, man, eventually. Maybe not right now, but eventually. She'll get, you know, she has a spirit for it. So, and that's like half the battle right there. But she did good. I didn't, I didn't have to yell at her or anything about that, about casting, learning how to cast or anything like that. And she was, I showed her this is how you work a DOA shrimp, you know. It's, that's all you need to know, you know. So, no, for that lesson, that was all she needed to know. So it was a good thing. Yeah, she says here on the chat, she's got high expectations. Oh, no. Well, that's okay, because at the lagoon, there's plenty of fish there, and you're going with Redfish Chuck and Dee, so you're in good hands there, man. So tell me, you were on a charter the other day, and your client got 9 redfish?
Yeah, they got my buddy. He actually hired me to take him fishing, and we went and we fished the actually just outside the lagoon in the Indian River, the north end of the Indian River.
Nice.
A spot I hadn't fished in a little while, one of those areas that I was checking out for our trip, see if anything was kind of roaming around. And yeah, he did good. He got 9 redfish and a handful of trout. Every one of them was, except for one, it was probably, I think he caught 4 or 5 fish that were over 20 inches. The other ones were just, the other one was just shy of that. So
cool.
It was a really stellar day. Yeah, no, it was awesome. But it was funny because it's one of the only times where I've ever been asked not to fish. So,
really? What do you mean? They just said, hey, let me do this, but, you know, just
yeah, pretty much.
Point the way.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's kind of weird.
Yeah, you know, and there's times where, like, I'll take folks out and they might not be able to cast very accurately. So they'll say, hey, you mind casting at that tail and fish? And you can hook it up and just hand off the rod, and I mean, I'm game for whatever, you know. It's,
yeah,
I'm on their time, so you know, whatever they want me to do. But yeah, it was a neat day. It was good times, you know. I'm just hoping that at some point next week I can get back out there on the water. I know I've got 4 or 5 possible trips booked.
Cool.
A few of them for the motor zone, so you know, that might be something that I might even think about taking you guys to, too, on the second day, if you're going to be here for 2 days, is that no motor zone, if everybody doesn't go down south by D.
Oh, no. See, I'm game for whatever. I know that we're getting there Friday night, and I'm game all day Saturday, man. I mean, if you want to get out there at the butt crack of dawn, and I'm game all day. But Sunday, we probably got to get out of there by, you know, 2-3 o'clock, you know, just so we can recover and get ourselves back together for Monday, you know. So, anyway, on your charter there, what were you using? Were you using bait or was it, you know, plastics or what?
Oh yeah, all artificial, just plastics.
Oh, awesome.
Yep.
That's the way to go,
man. Simple that way. Yeah. You know, and then, like I say, this time of year, the fish are only going to get more aggressive and more aggressive as the year progresses. So, you know, it's really exciting. Hopefully, we'll find some bigger fish than what we ran into last time. Some, you know, upper 20s, maybe even a couple 30-inch fish. That would be a lot of fun on soft plastics. But it's cool to watch those fish chase down a bait and push those wakes that you see swimming away from you, push them at you to try to eat your bait. It's pretty cool.
Wow, that's pretty cool. That would kind of freak me out a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, because you're not used to them coming at you. Wow, that's that's a little bit different. But no, I think we're excited about it, man. We're geeked up about it, and we can't stop talking about it. So, you know, pardon my enthusiasm, and pardon me for being so geeked up and you know, woohoo. But it's awesome. You know, it's a great place to fish, man. Now, down at the south end of the lagoon, is there you get like a little bit more current going on in there, like you know, deeper spots with a lot of current rushing through or something where it connects to something else?
No, just actually, the further south you go, the more stagnant the water gets because there is no inlet or no open flow area down there. So pretty much to the north of where we were at last time is where you'll start to see some kind of water movement. Up and around the Oak Hill area, you get a pretty good tide swing, and then the further north you go from there, it gets even more predominant. So, you know, we're kind of right there where we launched last time. We're kind of right at the kind of, I would say, the cutoff spot for any kind of tide movement or current, so to speak. Most of it's wind-driven. So, you know, if the wind's out of the east, the water on the west side is going to be a little bit higher than the water on the east side by nature of the way it works. So,
yeah, that was just really odd that day when we were out there. It was, you know, normally you see some sort of a tidal shift, you know, when you're out there for a couple of hours somewhere, you know. And, I mean, you know, dramatic from Jacksonville the day before where it was like, you know, a 5-foot difference in those creeks, you know, from high tide to low tide. But, yeah, that was really strange because even around here, you know, we don't usually have dramatic, you know, tides like that. And it was, I was just really, you know, it seemed like it was at the same level as when we left and when we came back in. And I just thought that was kind of, that was a little bit weird. You know, I'm not used to that kind of stuff. But it's really neat, man. I'm excited about all of this stuff. So do you ever get an opportunity to go to any of these boat shows there, Chuck? Do you have anything in your area or anything?
I do, actually. I used to go to, I haven't in a little while. We used to go out to the Orlando Boat Show every year and over at the Orlando Convention Center. And then we have Coastal Angler Magazine Boat Show Fishing Expo down in Melbourne, just south of me. Every year they put that on, and I usually go to that. Nothing big, nothing, you know, I haven't been to a big show in a while. I go to more tackle shows than I do boat shows. Just by nature of what I do for a living. So, you know, and I really enjoy it. I like to talk to, the different vendors and the different manufacturers, owners of the companies like Mark Nichols from DOA and those guys. I just get a kick out of talking to the guys within the industry and making friendships, you know?
Yeah, absolutely, man. That's another thing, you know, it was really fun meeting all those people, you know, and just, you know, talking about fishing and sitting in on some of the seminars, you know, it was a blast, you know, and you learn, you know, no matter who you go see, you're going to learn something, man. So, you know, they can't, you know, it's an hour long seminar and there's a whole wide variety of experience level of people that are watching it, you know, so it's kind of hard to get a little bit in depth with somebody that just bought their first fishing pole, you know, 15 minutes ago, you know. But it was. I love those things, man. Me and Chip were talking about how, you know, how it'd be kind of a cool thing if, you know, we possibly put up a Yak Angler / Kayak Fishing Radio booth at one of those, you know, and like got all the industry professionals, you know, around that we could, and like kidnapped them and made them come in and do some sound bites for us and stuff, you know, right there, and then mixed down later, you know, from a live report from the boat show or whatever, you know. I mean, it was just, the atmosphere was so fun, you know, with all different kinds of people that and, you know, from different, you know, from, you know, from boaters to lure manufacturers to, you know, Gary Loomis was there even. So it was like, you know, everybody and their mother goes to those things. So it's really, you know, it's the wide swath of people in the industry. It was really, it's really a lot of fun, man. So if you like that kind of stuff, get out and support it. Go have fun, man. Take your family. It's definitely a family event. But one thing I did see, you know, they go, well, you know, you can get a deal at the show. You know, they did have some pretty good deals. I did see an E21 carrot stick. It was like a 7.5-foot, you know, medium to heavy action carrot stick. And it was, I think it was originally like $250 or something, and it was a show special. They had a whole rack of them for $99. So that was if you're familiar with those are pretty nice rods, man. I know you're biased to the Redfish Chuck ones, but but those are some pretty nice rods, man. I couldn't believe it. I mean, I picked the thing up and it was like, it almost went flying out of my hands because I, you know, picked it up too hard because it didn't weigh anything. So it was pretty.
Yeah, I've been responsible for selling probably at least 100, if not more than that, of those rods at a previous tackle shop I worked at, and they're not bad. I mean, I think that they kind of got a bum rap. They had some quality control issues there for a little while, and a lot of guys had issues with breakage. And the company stands behind the product. You know, it's unfortunate that they had the breakage issues because it kind of put a damper on their name a little bit. But you know, I'd wait and see what those guys got coming out next year or so. I know they're going to bounce back. I mean, I talked to those gentlemen in long detail at the ICAST show a couple of years ago in Orlando, and you know, I was pretty impressed by their knowledge of the components they were using and everything else in building those rods. So it's a cool concept for sure, you know.
Yeah. Now, how did you get into ICAST? Come on, Chuck. You got to be some sort of a, I don't know, you know, you need to have the secret password or something, because anytime I've ever gone. They say, no, thank you, sir. And they, you know, politely escort me back to the parking lot.
You just got to register ahead of time. And now that you have your radio show, you can get a media pass, which won't be, you know, which would be a good thing, actually. You're talking about sound bites and stuff like that. The beauty about ICAST is it's designed for the manufacturers not just to come out and show off their products, but to try and get promotion for their products through the hype that's usually built up around ICAST. As an example, the Shimano Stratic CI4s that came out a couple years back, that 2500 that you used on that rod I built, Shimano wanted to build up a bunch of hype about that reel. So they had the reel there. Everybody was checking it out. Everybody loved it, whatever. And it won Best New Reel, or I think it was Best New Saltwater Reel or Best New Reel for 2009, I believe, or 10. And the hype that was generated just because they won that award at ICAST was unbelievable. We had people calling the shop trying to order those things. It's like the day after it won the award, and they weren't available for another 4 months. So it's a lot of fun. You know, I got in as a dealer, you know, working in the tackle shop, just a regular old dealer pass. Next year, because this year it's back in Vegas. Next year, I believe it comes back to Orlando. I'm going to go in with a press pass. So I'll just, you know, register through Yak Angler or whatever. Just so you know, it's fun about the press pass, man, and you'll enjoy it. Bring a small recording device or whatever, maybe even a camcorder. You can get these guys to give you as much information about their product as you want, you know. Because that's what, like I said, that's what they're there for. They're really hoping to promote the product. And, you know, I watch guys doing interviews with, I don't even know if they really had any credentials, but they're talking to manufacturers and stuff. And it's a cool time to really kind of put your feelers out there and get your name out there a little bit to some of these manufacturing groups. I mean, that's where I started to build my relationship with Yeti Coolers was at the ICAST show in Orlando.
Yeah, that's awesome. You know, I so far the plan is, and right now it's just, you know, I haven't booked any flights or anything like that, but suppose, you know, the plan is me and Adam and Isaac are all going to ICAST this year. So it's out in Vegas. And, you know, I mean, I looked at hotel, you know, stuff and looked at flights and all that. And I think Adam was supposed to get us registered. I guess you couldn't register or pre-register or whatever until the first week of February or something. And, you know, right not too long after they announced the dates and, you know, where and everything else. But, yeah, we're we're definitely planning on going. I don't have a plan solidified yet, but I'm definitely looking forward to it, man. Because Isaac went last year, and he was like, supposedly Mark and Adam were supposed to go from Yak Angler, and they didn't quite. You know, it was their flights got blacked out or something at the last minute, so they came down here and fished with us, you know. So I don't know, man. Would you rather go fishing or would you rather go to ICAST? I don't know.
I'd rather go to ICAST.
Yeah. I don't know, man. That's kind of a toss-up. But
I'll tell you, you'll have a lot of fun, that's for sure.
Yeah, I always you know, I like to check out all the stuff, and one of the best places to see all of the new gear and the notable stuff is usually Florida Sportsman. It does a really good job of putting out interesting stuff, interesting new gear, you know, and a lot of times they'll list the stuff that was, you know, that made the best in show and everything else, you know, so. That's always where I found out about it, and I'm like, man, look at this thing. This thing looks great. You know, how do I get to go? Ah, and the last time it was in Orlando, I didn't get a chance to go, but I'm definitely looking forward to it, man. Another thing I got to get to real quick. Juan from Kayak Fish PA asked me to mention this, and he's got a seminar coming up and on March 19th, and it's been a change of time. It's it was at 1 o'clock. It's no longer at 1 o'clock. It is at 11 o'clock. So make sure you note your calendars, and if you're in that area, he fishes the Susquehanna River. And you can check out the details at his website at Kayakfish PA. But they catch some. That guy catches some monstrosity smallmouth. So that's definitely you definitely want to go up there if you like smallmouth. Definitely go to that guy's seminar, man. He's the bomb when it comes to finding those small or those big. God, that's so hard to say. Those big smallmouth. Up there in the Susquehanna River, so give him a shout, man. And God, what else is going on this weekend, man? I'm like running out of stuff here to talk about, man. Help me out here, Chuck. Anything else on the rod building front?
No. Oh yeah, I got a funny story.
Okay, go.
I was actually in the middle of building a rod for Adam. And from Yak Angler, and he wanted me to build him a bait caster, and so I started putting the thing together, got the last coat of finish on it, and pulled it out and started messing with it. Had my buddy hold the tip of the rod, and I bowed up on it to show him how strong the blank was, and it blew up in my hand.
Oh,
so,
nice!
Yeah, so all that work for nothing. Adam's going to get a two-piece rod now instead of a one-piece rod. No, I'm just kidding. I'm actually going to be rebuilding the rod. And it's funny, we were talking about split grips and, you know, solid grips and everything like that before. On the earlier show, he actually requested that I build him one with a split grip. So that'll be a very interesting concept. I haven't done a lot of split grips. I've done a few. I've never done one on a baitcaster, so... It'll be interesting to see how it turns out.
Yeah, definitely. Now, I'll tell you, you know, when I was over there at the lagoon, God, it's just, that was such a great trip that I just can't stop talking about it. Chuck had a killer rod that he had built and a nice reel on there too. And he's like, here, check this out, man. And, you know, threw it in there, you know, hooked a redfish, pulled it in. Man, it was like going from driving a Chevette to, like, an Indy racer, man. I mean, you know, I'm not kidding you, man. That thing, that was great. And very, very nice, man. I mean, very slick, very, it was like butter, you know.
Oh,
so,
I appreciate that.
Yeah,
I actually put a lot of thought into that rod. I'll tell you another funny story real fast about that particular rod. I built that rod before I had the reel to go on it. And actually, I built that rod, I want to say it was like the week after ICAST. Because I went out to ICAST, and the only thing I wanted to see the entire show, the one thing I had to go and look at was the CI-4 Stratic 2500. I'm kind of I'm into lightweight rods. I don't like to use like heavy, clunky type stuff. I don't use reels much bigger than a 3000 if I'm fishing inshore. So that 2500 being made of carbon fiber, only weighing 7 ounces.
Wow.
Really appealed to me. So I went and checked it out, fell in love with it. Said, all right, well, I can't put this on a medium heavy rod. You know, it's too light. The reel really needs to be on a super light rod, not light action, or not too terribly light of action, just lightweight. So I went home, kind of busted out some paper and kind of drew out kind of an idea, cork wise and grip wise, and ordered a Lumis blank right before they were done selling off Lumis blanks, and you know, put that rod together, wrapped it in the color of the thing, of, you know, that matches the reel, and that rod sat in my garage for like 4 months as I waited and waited and waited to finally get my CI-4. And when I did, put it on it, and it was like, it was almost as if that rod came out of the factory. It was meant to have that reel on it. That's how good it feels in your hand. And I was really, really, really pleased with that rod. Probably one of my favorites that I ever built.
That's awesome. You know, I've always wanted, you know, I've always like, you know, entertain the thought of building a fly rod, you know, and I'm like, oh yeah, you know, look at this, ah, you know, and I was on that there for a while. I seriously was like looking at kits and looking at you know, video, how to videos and everything, and I never pulled the trigger on it, you know, but it's always something that I've always wanted to do. So I think that's really cool, man. And I definitely want to check it out. You know, Chip is like, oh, yeah, you can do it, man. I mean, one thing that he doesn't know about me, though, is I'm not very mechanically inclined. So, so
right.
you know, something like, you know, when you take the a screwdriver and you take off that, you know, the plates that are in front of your wall sockets, you know, I mean, that's like an all-day project for me, you know, so... I'm not turning it, you know, I don't have to turn in my man card or anything like that, but definitely the, you know, I'm mechanically challenged with some stuff. And, you know, so when Chip says it's easy, you know, it might not be for me. So I might have to get like a really cheapo depot one, you know, off the, you know, one of the kits to start off with. And then when I ruin that one, and I know where I figure out where I made all my mistakes, then maybe the next one might be a little bit better.
Yeah. Oh, I'll tell you what, man, you start off building, don't build a fly rod to be your first rod you build. Build yourself a lightweight spinning rod, because it's extremely easy to do. And you can get away with something like that, a kit for something like that for 30, 40, maybe even 50 bucks. And you get a decent product at the end of the day. The problem with building fly rods is that if you're going to build something that's going to load properly, it's going to, you know, cast your line the way you want it to, you're going to end up spending a fortune. I mean, I'm teetering on whether or not I want to even attempt it, because the blank I really want to use to build my 8-weight is like $460 just for the blank.
Wow,
you know?
Seriously?
Yeah, and that's at my cost, and I get a really good rate because we're also a distributor of rod building parts. So, yeah, I just, you know, the cost is just, it's astronomical. But I mean, like I say, there's only a few things that you can do in this sport or in fishing in general. That's just kayak fishing, to really kind of put your own spin on things, tying flies, pouring plastics, as a landing crew does, or building your own rods, that kind of thing. Catching a fish on something that you built and you put together yourself, and you know, you got 15, 20, 30, 40 hours of work into, is pretty special. So,
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's definitely not an easy thing, man. I could see that, you know, watching some of the how-tos and everything, and how unforgiving it was. You know, if you did something wrong, it would really, you know, basically just toss the thing in the dustbin, because it wasn't going to be any good anymore. You know, one little wrong thing, you know, and it was you know, some of the stuff that I saw, you know, how to get the bubbles out, and, you know, I mean, just working on some, you know, it looked like a really cool thing to do. And plus, it's totally, you know, it's kind of like catching a fish on a fly that you tied, you know. It's kind of, I think it would be kind of cool to catch a fish on a rod that you tied, you know, or that you built, you know, and a fly that you tied.
Yeah, no, for sure. I'll tell you, it's not really that hard, Rob. I mean, you can do it. I mean, the spinner rod's the way to go. I can build just a regular generic spinner rod, start to finish. I could probably have it all together and fishing it in 2 days.
Wow.
You know, but I don't do fancy chevron wraps and diamond wraps and all that kind of thing, because the fish don't see it. It doesn't make a difference. Like, it doesn't do anything to the rod besides makes it look kind of pretty, I guess. But, you know, I'm kind of a keep it simple, stupid type of guy. You know, I'm with you in the respect that I'm definitely not mechanically inclined. So, you know, the easier or the less stress that I can put on myself to do something, the better off I'll be, you know. And building rods to me is just, it's a very stress-free kind of deal. So, the hardest part, honest to God, the hardest part is working with the cork. And it's really not that difficult if you have the right equipment. But, you know, you got to understand that when you buy a piece of cork, you're not buying it usually to size of the blank. You're buying it as just a piece of cork, and then you have to literally hollow out the inside of the cork to fit the blank that you're using. And there's tools that they make, reamers they make for that, and makes your life a lot easier than sitting there with like a file or a piece of sandpaper trying to do it from the inside out. But that's really where most people go wrong, because if you're going to have a failure, it's usually where you're going to have it first, is down in the reel seat or in the grips. And, you know, as long as you get that part done properly, the rest of it's simple. I mean, just spining the rod, you do that before you put anything else on it. This way here, you know which way your guides need to lay if you're building a bait caster or a spinner rod. But, and then wrapping the guides, there's a formula that Fuji actually has out. You can look it up. I believe Fuji.com. They may even have it. I know for sure that Mudhole's got it, where if you're building a 7-foot rod, they give you kind of an example of where your guide placement should be in inches, so that you know, okay, well, from reel seat to my first guide should be, I'm throwing something out there, I haven't measured it, but say 27 inches. Okay. So, and then, you know, they'll say, okay, from your first guide to your second guide will be 12 inches. And then, you know, maybe 9 or 10 inches, and then 8 inches, and 7, and 6, and so forth, until you get to the tip top. So that part's easy, you know, but the cork and stuff is the hardest part.
Yeah. You know, it looked like it, but Chip says that there's other stuff to do, that you can actually buy already made handles or something, so I'm not getting too discouraged with it. But that's awesome. Hey, you know, Laramie, Miss Batcast wants to, you know, she saw, I was on Mudhole one day, and she saw that they had camouflage blanks. And if there's anything that she loves, it's anything camouflage. Okay. She wants a camouflage kayak, and she wants a camouflage blank, right? You know, one of these, they had them, you know. It was like you could, the whole kit, you know, it was like a Mudhole kit. It was like, you know, camo, the whole thing. So we'll have to get her one of those. But, hey, another thing I got, I don't know if you, have you ever heard of Breathe Like a Fish shirts,
yeah.
Chuck?
Yeah.
Well, I picked up.
Yeah, sure.
Those are awesome. If you ever, if you get a chance, check out breathelikeafish.com. And what they are is, it's a kind of a technical shirt. It's just a long sleeve pull over your head type of shirt, and it has the you know, it's the microfiber, the wicking stuff, And what they do is, and it's a very cool shirt. It has like mesh underarms, you know, armpits in it. It has like mesh, you know, down the sides. And, you know, the object is to keep you cool, keep the, you know, the fast dry, you know, any sort of perspiration or you know, if you get wet or whatever, it'll dry really fast. So those are really cool. And they have what in the neck, they have a buff built into it. So basically, all, and it has a actual like a mesh kind of vent hole. So you don't fog up your sunglasses and everything. So I actually bought a new, you know, a face guard or whatever you want to call it. I don't. You can't really call it a buff, can you? Because it's not a buff. But anyway, it's and it has the mesh, you know, mouth, you know, vent hole, so to speak, and you can breathe like a fish. And it's a great thing. I put it on. It wasn't fogging up my sunglasses. So, you know, if you get a chance and you need a nice new technical shirt with a buff built into it, man, check them out. You ever, do you use a buff, Chuck?
Yeah, absolutely.
Man, I tell you what, I had no clue. I'm out there one day and God, I was with Ken Morrow and we were out there fly fishing Honeymoon Island for like, God, we were out there almost 12 hours, and I came back in, and, you know, I had a hat on all day, you know, wide brim hat and long sleeve shirt and everything, and I came back in, and my face, I looked like landing crew, man, you know, like I was just totally just cooked, man, and I was like, what the heck, you know, I had this hat, well, it's from the sun reflecting off the water, and, you know, if you're not careful, man, if you don't know, that'll burn your face off, man, quicker than you can... Then you know. So use sunscreen and definitely invest in a buff or some sort of face covering. I know it's too early in the year for me to get into my sun protection episode, but that's coming. Trust me. So
well, you know what? It's not, man. We here in Florida, we got to cover up all year round.
Yeah, I know, but it's you know, more people are on the water in the summertime and everything. So I kind of try to. I was going to try to do that, but last year, man, I went out and got absolutely blistered. I had a long sleeve shirt on, had the hat on, had the buff on, and no leg protection. So my legs, man, I looked like Toxic Avenger last year. And then after that trip, man, I'm not kidding you. I couldn't go out for a couple of weeks after that without putting like a wet towel on my legs, because it was just, you know, the sun beating on them after that was just like, ah! And if you see some of these guys that, you know, spend a lot of time fishing and on boats and, you know, out in the sun, man, let me tell you something. Those guys, definitely you could see some serious sun damage going on. So definitely invest in your sun protection. Wear sunscreen. Wear long sleeves if you get a chance. I personally hate wearing long sleeves when it's hot out. But definitely do the sunscreen thing, because some of this sun damage, you can't fix it. So, you know, make sure you take care of that, man. It's definitely important. But, so Chuck, I know I was telling you about the squitters the other day. Do you know what squitters are by any chance? Okay. Well, I'm sorry. I'm not putting you on the spot or anything, but the Mad Snooker was talking about a group of people that they'll be, you know, some good old folks, and they all jump on a pontoon boat, and you know, it's kind of like using I gotta get the proper music up for this, man, but what you do is you want to go fishing, right? You want to go fishing, right? So what better way than to get a pontoon boat and an armful of rods and a 6-ounce pyramid sinker. And I'm just going down the list of stuff that you need when you're a squitter. And probably about 5 boxes of frozen squid. And don't forget, probably 5 or 6 caches of Natty Light. That pretty, or Black Label, right? Because this is going to be some good, this is what we're going to, we're going fishing, right? Fishing is an excuse, something to do while you're getting drunk. So, sorry if nobody knew any.
What has happened to the show?
It's degraded, man, down to...
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so all you need is a pontoon boat, about 10 of your friends. You go to where Redfish Chuck took you fishing the day before. And, what else could you use there?
Let me tell you what. Around here, if you're a guy and you're in a pontoon boat with a bunch of other dudes and you're going, I guess, squidding or whatever, you automatically, when you get back to the dock, have to turn in your man card. A pontoon boat's allowed. The only use of a pontoon boat, honest to God, in my opinion, the only reason why anybody in their right mind should ever own a pontoon boat is to go speckled perch fishing in the middle of a lake. Because that's
speckled
about it.
Perch fishing. There you go, man. That's awesome.
That's about it, man. That's about it.
Oh my God. No, I'm just saying, on this coast, man, we get a lot of I'll call them recreational anglers that are doing just that, man. You know, out there where in the same area that you're fishing, you know, with a pontoon boat, with 6-ounce pyramid sinkers, and several boxes of frozen squid. So I think we're safe, Chuck. Not safe, but I think the fish might be safe. You know, because what are they going to catch?
That makes up a large portion of my business, buddy.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry to any of the squidders that hired Chuck there. But
not my clients, man. Over at the shop.
Okay. Those clients. Okay.
Yeah, the guys that come in and buy steel leaders to go catch redfish.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. That's right. I forgot the steel leaders with like the orange and green beads on them.
Yeah, because you know you got to have steel leaders in order to catch a redfish because of those massive teeth they have.
Absolutely, you got to have that and. Let's see, the pyramid sinker, squid,
probably carry a bang stick as well.
Like an offshore rod or something, usually?
Yeah.
Because, you know, them fish are big over there at Mosquito Lagoon. I'm sorry. I'm telling you, man, that, you know, the fish are safe over here. We get a lot of people like that, and they catch quite a bit of catfish doing that, you know. And I just think it's funny when I see that stuff. But it gets scary because I'm out there in the kayak, you know. And even though my kayak's bright green, I'm afraid, man, one day somebody's just going to mow me down, you know. Just, you know, people were jet skiing in the no motor zone not too long ago, you know?
Yeah.
So you gotta take care of yourself and you gotta watch, you know, gotta be careful with it, man. But, no.
I don't even know what to say now. I'm pretty
sorry,
much done.
I had to mention that, man, because I just thought that was the funniest thing in the world, man. You know, they want to go do that where, you know, and they're going to go out there and catch snook, you know. And I'm thinking, man, really? Holy crap. You know, it's either that or cast net the school of greenbacks that you're fishing, you know.
Right.
On your pontoon boat, you know. It's usually either a pontoon boat or like one of those old like 70s boats, you know, like the boat that was like towing the water. Yeah, like the boat that was towing the water skier in Jaws 2, you know.
Right.
And they got one of those and you know, and they're fishing with that, you know. And I'm not like out there making fun of somebody or something, you know.
No,
but
I didn't have it at all.
But I mean, no, seriously. I mean, not like, oh, you know, because you have one of those boats, ha ha ha. No, it's you know, it's all the all the other stuff is part of it, man. You know, the 5 boxes of squid and you know, 6 or 7 cases of Natty Light and you know, your steel leaders and stuff, man. I mean, it's pretty funny, you know. But it's scary at the same time because, you know, sometimes I'm afraid for my safety. And I definitely should be afraid for my safety after this program.
Yeah, I'd say so.
I know where...
be on the lookout for a bright green kayak making fun of us squitters.
He uses them lures, don't he?
That guy there's fancy. He throws them plastic lures at fish, and he's in that plastic boat. Looks kind of like a wash tub.
Yeah, I never did care for it. He must think he's some kind of half-ass Eskimo or something.
Look at this tree-hugging hippie over here.
Yeah, see, I got a motor. No, but, uh-oh. Oh, Scott's weighing in here. He's got a 1986 aluminum bass tracker.
Wow. No, that's all right. That doesn't qualify for squitters. You're good.
Yeah.
Bass trackers are awesome.
Yeah, that'll work. You know, you know, this kind of freaked me out. You know, when I was into bass fishing, probably about 95, 96, 94, in that time frame, you know, God, eons ago, you could get a bass tracker or you know, some sort of a bass boat for about, you know, between $17,000 and $20,000 on average. You know, I don't know, but I saw some bass boats over the weekend, and I mean, they looked like a bass tracker to me. I mean, I don't know what brand it was or anything like that, but that thing was like, they had a price tag on it, and it was like $34,000, man, for a bass boat.
Yeah,
and that's
well,
not,
I mean, a lot of that depends on what kind of engines are hanging on the back of them nowadays.
I'm sure, but I was just like, holy moly, man!
You can still go to Bass Pro Shops. Still has bass trackers for like $10,000.
Oh, no kidding, really?
Yeah,
that was. I don't know. I just haven't looked at a price tag on one because, you know, what for? God, Chuck! Now this is funny. Do I carry an air horn? I have a extremely loud whistle. Okay, I mean, if I blow this thing, I have to like cover my ears when I blow this thing because it's so damn loud. My poor dog will actually want to leave the house if I blow that thing in the house. But I'm trying to think. Oh, God. They're talking about flare guns now. Oh, my God. Chuck, what have we done to the radio show now?
Hey, that's what you hey, listen. The best way to keep boaters off of you when you're in a kayak is ricochet a flare off of someone's bow. That's all I'm talking about.
Well... I wouldn't aim right at their bow, but, you know,
right.
No, you know, I'm sure that you get the, I mean, well, I don't know, man. Do you get the, really get the recreational, you know, beer drinkers over there that are like, you know, they're using fishing as an excuse to go drinking, you know?
Man, there's no etiquette on the water anymore.
Man. See, I just can't do that. It's like I can't take, and it's not like a holier than thou speech or, you know, because I like beer like anybody else does, you know. But, you know, I can't sit there and, like, be pounding beer in my kayak while I'm, like, looking for fish or trying to fish, you know? I don't know. It just gets distracting, I guess. I don't know. Call me a wimp or something. I don't know. I guess I'll turn in my man card at the goon, right?
I'll be expecting it. No, you know what, man? It's funny because every couple of weeks, somebody on one of the local forums, whether it be Florida Sportsman or Orlando Kayak Fishing Club or whatever, there's always somebody complaining about the etiquette or lack thereof on the Mosquito Lagoon or the Indian River or whatever. And unfortunately, the thing that gets me is in a state where there's almost as many registered boats as there are four-wheelers and dirt bikes and that kind of thing, but which, you know, you don't have to have a license really truly to operate either one of them, but there should be a mandatory, not only a written test, but a practical test or driving test, if you will, to be a boat owner. I mean, you should be liable just the same as you are if you're driving a car on the road.
Absolutely.
You should have a license. And if FWC stops you for being in a no wake zone and you're hauling butt, you get a ticket just like you would if you're on the road, which you will get. But they give you points against that boating license, and after so many points, they revoke your boating license. And if you get caught boating, you go to jail just like you would if you had a suspended driver's license. I think what that would do is that would make everybody kind of think twice about running around like, you know, who they think they are in their powerboats or. It's not just them. I mean, there's kayakers that are just as bad. And you know what's funny is, I don't know if you guys see it over there, but there's a line that's been driven over here between kayakers and powerboaters, and I don't really understand it. I mean, yeah, I kayak fish. Yeah, I do some kayak guiding and whatever, and I'm probably one of the biggest advocates of the sport. But at the same time, I've got a 25-foot center console sitting outside my in-law's house. So, I do both. And but there's like this unwritten lack of respect between the two groups. And, you know, unfortunately, I think it's going to end up costing somebody their lives one day, this lack of respect, you know?
It's the whole, you know, not only between, you know, boaters and kayakers, but also, you know, between boaters, kayakers, and shore anglers, too, you know. I mean, I try to pay attention. If I see somebody fishing a spot or something, you know, I don't try to, like, you know, blow through their, you know, paddle through their drift or something like that, you know, or the area that they're drifting in. You know, if they're in boats or kayaks or something, I try to give people a wide berth, man, just like I would expect them to do to me, you know. Because that's the, like, worst thing. I can't tell you how many times this has happened, and there's, like, no etiquette involved. And it's like, is something wrong with you or something? Where, you know, you're out there, and you'll have three people fishing a greenback school, you know? You can see it, you know? You're plain as day, three people fishing a school of greenbacks. And, you know, it never fails. A boat just comes rolling up and starts throwing a cast net right, you know, right where you're fishing. I just don't. I don't understand that. So, but we'll have an etiquette episode too coming up, and you know, we'll dig into that further. It's like getting too late to get into that. But what'd you say?
So I think that would be a good topic for an evening discussion, because there's a lot of folks that are getting into the sport and just now starting to pick up whether it's kayaking or motorboat or whatever. You know, and these folks need to be educated. You know, part of the problem too is some of the guides and charter captains that are taking these people out are the ones that are being you know, rude on the waterways or not kind of giving people their space or what have you, and that sets a bad precedent for, you know, their client, because their client thinks, oh, this is accepted behavior and so on and so forth. But yep, next topic. Sorry, buddy.
No, it's okay. I it's something that needs to be, you know, we talk about safety a lot and stuff, and, you know, that's just, I think that's just part of it, you know. Etiquette is part of safety, you know. But that's a topic for a different show. You know, and it, once again, it's not holier than thou or anything like that, man. It's just that, you know, I understand, hey, You know, you want to make the most of your fishing and you want to catch fish, but man, you just can't go in there and just trample all over somebody's fishing spot, you know, that somebody's fishing. You know, I mean, I know you don't have a sign up that says, hey, I'm fishing here, you know, bugger off or something, but no, it's, you know, we definitely got to touch on that, man. You know, there's got to be some sort of etiquette. So that's awesome. So where are you fishing at this weekend, Chuck? You got anything going on?
Yeah, I'm not fishing this weekend.
No?
I got to work. I got to work at the store, so I'm probably just going to be dreaming about fishing, watching everybody else go fishing, pretending that I was fishing. I might tie off a piece of monofilament off to my kid and let him run around the house and pull some drag. Make it sound like I'm fishing, but
there you go. That's no, cool.
I plan on fishing the beginning of next week, hopefully. I don't know if I'm going to do any kayaking. I'm really trying to get offshore and catch some cobias, and it's just been flat. It's just been flat rough, so you know, definitely not conducive for taking the kayak offshore. That would not be safe. So I don't know. We'll see. You know, I really need to start scouting for sure, so I know what to do when you guys get here, where to take you, or whatever. And hopefully put you guys on a mess of fish again. But
yeah, I'm excited about it.
Are you fishing?
Yeah, I'm actually going out. You know, if it's not blowing 25, it's like every day for the last month it's been blowing 25. So as long as it's not blowing 25, I'm planning on going Sunday.
Good.
So and I'm excited about it, man. Trust me, it's like been a long winter for me. And so I'm definitely needing to get out and you know, at least get the kayak out and paddle around and act like I'm fishing or something. But supposedly you know, and I can't there's not enough data for me for, you know, to know. So we'll see. I'm gonna probably find out Sunday morning. So,
Miss Badcalf taking advantage of this day to go fishing with you as well?
No, because her kayak is still at her dad's house down in Fort Myers. So, and I'm like, yeah, that's doing you a lot of good down there, man. So that's another trip, though. We're probably going to go down there in the next month or something and you know, go fishing with her dad, you know, and her brother or something down there, because her dad kayak fishes too. So,
oh, very cool.
He's all, he's, you know, that's like down there by Matt Lachey where they go. So I'm excited about that too, because I've always wanted to fish down there. So anyway, well, that brings us to the end of yet another edition of, the always dreaded Kayak Fishing Radio's Late Show. And I am your host, Rob DeVore, otherwise known as the Bad Batcast. And we have been on the phone for an entire hour with Redfish Chuck. Thank you for hanging in there, Chuck. Thank you for not hanging up on me when I went off the deep end. No problem, man. And if you're in the Titusville area and you want to go kayak fishing, make sure you look up Chuck, ChucksKayakAdventures.com. So that's it for me. Check me out, BadBatCast.com or YakAngler.com. And that's it, man. And I hope to have more stories some good stories for you from Sunday. And hopefully I can get out there. So y'all have a good weekend. And until then, see ya.